This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Speaking of Bob, intern Dom is in for Donnie today. He'll be producing the PM show. Do you feel like he took you off the hook? You called one of Bob's opinions ridiculous, but intern Dom actually called Bob a moron.
Yeah, I think I'm completely off the hook for that. Dom took it a huge step forward because I was talking about one of Bob's opinions. Dom was taking a direct shot at Bob. That's a huge level up. That's not one level up. That's like four levels up.
Right. I mean, he didn't directly call him that, but
he doubled down when he found out that it was Bob. He said, well, then Bob doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well,
that's doubling down.
To be fair, we were talking about Shohei Ohtani, the greatest athlete ever. And Dom said, what about Tiger Woods? And I said, some people think Jack Nicklaus is better than Tiger Woods, even in golf. Just golf. Forget about greatest athlete ever. And Dom said, anyone who thinks that is a moron. And I said, Bob thinks that. And then, then Bob came in the room and Dom doubled down. So it was still sort of indirect, but it's sort of hard to deny at this point, isn't it?
I insult Bob. Well, whoever says that is a moron.
See?
That's what he said.
Well, whoever says that is a moron.
Right. And then I insult
Bob. I insult Bob. I insult Bob.
That was a shot, intern Dom.
That was great. All right. Let's go to the Noah Constrictor. Noah Hiles. Shelty's old friend. Have you spoken with Shelty since the firing, Noah? Did you text him, you know, good luck, that type of thing?
Yeah, I sent him a text. I waited a day after, and I got a nice reply. So that's all I've talked to him. So just one text and got one reply, and I think that's the end of it.
I imagine Shelty back in Florida, and I imagine he'll get another job in baseball. I don't think as a manager, but I think maybe as a hitting instructor, coach type, that type of thing. Is that the way you feel?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, he's a pretty well-respected guy within the baseball community. I think he'll probably get another, like, bench coach job or instructor of some sort. Yeah, he's got a lot more jobs ahead of him.
The Pirates are playing well under the new manager. 6-3 in their last nine. 9-10 overall isn't great, but compared to what they were doing, it's the 27 Yankees. What has changed, and how much does Don Kelly have to do with the change?
I think they're playing a lot looser. I mean, I've talked with some guys in the clubhouse, and they just said, you know, when you know it feels like your manager is about to lose his job, you play tight. I think even entering this year, there were some guys who anticipated that Shelty was on the hot seat, and that puts pressure on everyone. And now they're playing a little bit looser. They're playing a little bit more relaxed, and they can actually just do their thing. They can play their game. I think another key component of it is they're giving the right guys more playing time. I mean, this team's been better when Alexander Canario's played left field. This team's been better when Henry Davis has been in the lineup as of late. Both defensively and now over the last week, offensively. Shelton got a lot of criticism for his lineup construction, the inconsistencies of it, maybe not having the best nine, the hottest nine in the lineup every day. And now guys are getting consistent opportunities and you're seeing better results.
Noah Hiles of the Post-Gazette on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. So, Noah, it seems to me, and I wrote this yesterday, I think, that Henry Davis should be your starting catcher and that there's an obvious platoon that's just begging to happen here, but only if Joey Bart can play a little bit of first base. And God knows they've tried other guys at first base without much practice. He crushes left-handed pitching. Spencer Horwitz hits right-handed pitching. Is there any chance that Joey Bart could move to first sometimes and catch sometimes?
I mean, maybe. I don't think so, just because, I mean, how many times have we seen them trot someone else out there at first base and it go incredibly poorly? You know, it hasn't worked with a lot of guys they tried that with throughout spring training and even in the regular season. I think maybe if we do see it, it comes with the mentality of, hey, we've got to look big picture here, not 2025. And if you can find a way to include Joey Bart in the future plans, if Henry Davis ends up panning out and being your everyday catcher, then you have to do that. So I don't think it's a realistic possibility just yet, but as we move forward and if Henry checks his boxes, it might be something they consider.
What do you do with Joey Bart then? And well, they may very well think he's still their starting catcher. So I guess the question is, what are they going to do with Joey Bart when he comes back? Will he still be that guy? And if he's not, what are the options with him?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it depends on how Henry Davis plays. I agree with you that, I mean, Henry Davis should be your number one catcher until he gives you another reason not to be the number one catcher. You've got to play him with the bulk of playing time, give him the bulk of the reps, and see what he does. And if he continues to play like he has over the last couple of weeks, that's the best thing you could hope for, really, in this 2025 season for what remains. So after you get that answer, then you have to figure out what you do with Joey Bart. I mean, if Henry doesn't perform, then I think you know. It's like, okay, well, Joey's still the primary catcher. But if Henry plays well, especially hits well, because I think his defense is already a lot better than Bart's, then you have to figure it out. You have to figure out what you want to do with Endy Rodriguez, because you mentioned the platoon factor there. I mean, Endy's a switch hitter and has played first base, so he could be that platoon option. And maybe you think about moving Joey Bart, a guy who you gave next to nothing away to get from the Giants. Do you think about maybe just trading him at the deadline, an above-average bat who could be a backup catcher, a pinch hitter, a guy who could be a platoon player potentially for a playoff team? Or do you try to move him around and find him a new position so he can be an everyday contributor here still?
Limits, the thought of leaving you out of this conversation is positively abhorrent.
Noah, Joe and I earlier in the show kicked around Key Brian Hayes and what should happen with him moving forward. The Pirates should trade him, or I'm of the opinion that his defense is just so solid at third. If they can have a good enough competent lineup around him, he can just bat ninth and kind of hide in the lineup. Where do you fall on Hayes and what his future might eventually look like?
It's very similar to what they have with Triolo, where they have two very valuable defensive gloves, but you know, defensive tool only players don't really allow you to maximize their value when they play on a team that's lacking on offense. If these guys were playing for a team like the Red Sox, who's fifth in the league in slugging and has the second worst fielding percentage, they give you more value there. They make your lineup better and they make your bench better. But for Brian, it's tough because you have a little bit of a commitment. I think some teams would want him, but what are you going to necessarily get? And is it going to equate the value that you would get if Brian were to remain here and potentially just become a league average hitter, something he has not done since 2023? So I think they're going to probably stick it out with him for the remainder of this year, just see what happens. A, just see if he could stay healthy for a full year. I mean, we haven't had any health scares from him yet, knock on wood, as we enter June. But I think you have to stand pat and just give him a full year and see how he looks at the end of that year, and then maybe explore a move in the offseason if you feel like you can get something better at third base as far as an offensive producer.
Noah Hiles of the Post-Gazette. Read his stuff at postgazette.com. When are we going to play golf again, Noah?
Whenever I get back, Joe. I've it's been a busy time here. I know you're a busy guy, but I would love to get out with you on the golf course.
When are we going to see Bubba Chandler?
Probably after you and I play golf. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to answer because I thought he'd be here by now. I thought there were a couple of times that made a lot of sense for him to get here. You would think that this upcoming homestand makes all the sense in the world. They have 9 games, so he could potentially make 2 starts at PNC Park if it lined up properly. But I don't know if it's ever – I mean, I'm sure it's going to happen at some point, but I don't think they're in a huge rush to get him up here because, A, the starting pitching's been good, And B, I mean, they're thinking long term, and financially speaking, it's probably not in the organization's best interest to bring him up until you can all but guarantee he doesn't win Rookie of the Year.
So when is that? 3 weeks?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. It's hard, like I said, it's hard to speculate because I don't understand why he's not up here now. I mean, if you're trying to send a message to your players that, hey, we're fielding the best team possible, even if in a year where we're clearly out of it, but we want to have the best players, we want to try to develop something here, then he should be up. He's not up, so I think if he's not coming up this homestand, then probably the next one. I think still we see him sometime in June. It should be this upcoming homestand, but I don't know if it's going to be.
Is it just a matter of days for Nick Gonzalez until he returns?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the date of which his rehab assignment started in front of me, but you only get 20 days for a rehab assignment, and I feel like that clock is ticking. I know he had a little bit of a setback. He got hit on the hand by a pitch when it started, but they said it didn't, like, add any injury to him, but it did keep him, like, on the bench for a game or two, I believe. So I think they're going to ride that rehab assignment out until, you know, the 20-day max hits. So if you want to really try to figure it out, just look at when that started. I believe it was, I think it was the same weekend when Horowitz joined the team. So that would have been, what, 2 weekends ago when they were in Philly? So do the math. From that point on, he has 20 days.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Noah, we have the draft coming up. I believe the Pirates pick 6th. Any interesting stories surrounding that? They're going to go with a high school kid? Who and what are people talking about?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting part of it is there aren't a lot of college bats in this year's draft. It's very heavy on the pitching side, which, as we all know, one, the Pirates develop pretty well, and two, the Pirates already have a lot of. So you could see them potentially draft a guy like another Connor Griffin type, which, you know, in theory, if you could guarantee that your first round pick ends up looking like Connor Griffin has been looking in his first year as a pro, then you would make that move. But you're gambling when you take a high school bat, especially in an org that has kind of struggled at developing them. And if there's a college arm that you could draft and get big league ready in 2 to 3 seasons, that becomes a valuable trade asset for you and something that you could flip if it remains healthy for probably something that could help your lineup on a day-to-day basis.
Man, it's something to look at, the Ben Cherington regime here, because it's not just all the high first-round picks. Like, I'm looking at this year's draft order, and of all the draft-eligible players in all the land and lands that they're available, they take 6th. Then they take 50th, so 2 of the top 50 players. And then they have a competitive balance pick, 3 of the top 73. Then they come back at 82, 4 of the top 82. Like, it's not just every year they pick high. That means you pick high in every round, let alone the competitive balance picks. My God, where are all these guys? Or any of these guys who aren't the obvious ones?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the biggest story for this regime right now, right? It's just they've traded away some players at the beginning of this rebuild that are still playing Major League Baseball, a lot of them playing for teams competing for the postseason. So they had some value attached to them, yet the returns weren't good on those trades. And then they've had high draft picks. I think they've picked inside the top 10, I believe, every year, if I'm not mistaken. And a lot of those picks have been on hitters. Obviously, you know, Skeens was one of them, and they've had, I think, another pitcher in the first round as well. But for the most part, it's been all position players, and you look at the lineup, I mean, Davis is here now, Gonzalez is here now, but they don't have that that matching production that they've got on the pitching side. That's been the story here, and it's not just showing in the major leagues, it's in the minor leagues. When you look, oh, who's on the way? Oh, it's more pitchers. Well, where are your hitters? Where are your guys that you took with those competitive balance picks in the second through fifth round? And they're all looking right now to be average to slightly above average minor leaguers at best.
Yeah, man, one of the interesting storylines the rest of the year for me is are some of these guys going to save Ben Cherington's job? Like, I think Henry Davis, Nick Gonzalez, Canario, those guys could literally save his job. If they're around a 500 team the rest of the way and some of these guys advance, like, that could make the difference for Cherington staying or going. Which side are you leaning with right now? Is he going to be back next year?
I'm right there with you, where it really comes down to the names that you mentioned. I'll even throw in a couple more. Like, you would have to assume IKF gets traded in the next couple of months. If Peguero can come back and prove to look like an everyday big leaguer in the final couple months of the season, if Jack Sawinski ever returns, if Spencer Horwitz ends up looking like, hey, that wasn't actually that bad of a trade, and this team plays better, it might save Cherington's job, because then he can make the argument, look, like, when this team was at full health and when it got Bubba Chandler and the hitters that I've drafted and acquired and the lineup was how we designed it to be, they played above average baseball. And you can blame it on injuries, you can blame it on the manager, you can blame it on a couple of other factors. And I know Nutting doesn't want to do a rebuild, so if he's going to fire the general manager, he's got to find someone to come in here, work with the budget that we all know exists, and try to make something better. That's a tough task. So if this team plays good baseball and it's 100-plus remaining games, it might just make more sense to the Pirates. I'm not saying I agree with it, to keep what they have going and say, look, we ended on a high note. Let's try to build and add a little bit more moving forward into 2026.
What do you think their confidence level is in Cherington, especially for this upcoming draft?
I mean, the draft is, like, I think the biggest misconception is, like, how much of an impact the general manager actually has in the draft. Like, the general manager hires people to make these draft decisions, but there's a whole department dedicated to the draft. And last year, Justin Horowitz took over as the amateur scouting guy, and he had a good draft last year, it looks like. I mean, with what they've brought in, they've used two of those draft picks to bring in major league players already. They traded their 17th round pick for Valdez, which looks like a pretty good deal, all things considered. I don't think that 17th rounder was going to be better than Emmanuel Valdez, who isn't amazing, but still is a big leaguer. And then they traded, I believe it was Hartle. I think he was like a 6th or 7th round pick. He was part of the Horwitz deal. So they helped use two of those draft picks already to bring in major league talent. One of those picks is Connor Griffin, and there are a couple of other really high-rated high school players. So that's who's making these draft decisions. It's not like Ben Cherington is just sitting here and choosing who to pick all by himself. So, I mean, if Cherington's here, if he's not here, those are the people that are going to make decisions regardless. So is there pressure on him? I don't know, because at the end of the day, it's going to be the same people making those decisions. I mean, he makes the final decision, but every GM pretty much relies strictly on what their amateur scouting department says, and they go with the guy that they recommend. And that's how it's worked. That's how it works for all baseball teams, and that's how it's going to work for this one.
Right. So it still comes back on him, though, because he's doing the hiring.
I mean, yeah. And like I said, he just hired a new guy who, at his last job, helped build Boston's farm system. Look at what that looks like right now. And now he's here, and 1 year in, he had a really good draft last year, I think. So let's see what he does this year.
Noah, we appreciate the time. Enjoy yourself out in San Diego. I imagine the weather's pretty good, yes?
I am in Arizona at the airport right now, about to hop on the flight there. So I'll text you and let you know.
Holy horse milk. You're not yet in San Diego.
Yep.
This guy's all over the place limits.
Yep, Mr. Worldwide, baby.
Are you a good traveler, Noah? Are you polite to people? Do you get cranky in the mornings? Are you cranky at airports? Sometimes I was when I was a beat writer.
The only time it really gets to me is like when I'm middle of the plane and people like stand up as soon as the flight lands and try to like just rush down the aisle, or when there's limited cabin or like cabin headspace.
Yeah.
And there's like backpacks there and I just need to put my carry-on up there and people refuse to move their backpacks and I have to stand there with my carry-on until someone who works right. on the flight can say that. Like, I only get mad when people don't know what they're doing. If everyone can just act accordingly, you got no problems from Noah Hiles.
Now, do you huff and puff or say something? Is it visibly clear that you're angry, or do you keep it all inside?
Or is it the Bechtold sigh?
I just give him a look. I just give him a look like, what are we doing?
Joe, I'm getting it again right now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This number calls me, and it has like the same three numbers on it.
Yeah.
Like right around this time, and it always says spam risk on my phone, but it keeps calling. Like every day I get a call right around this time.
I know. I get the same.
It's terrible.
Not the same number probably, but it is. For me, it's the same one every day.
Oh, yeah.
Don't answer it because then they record your voice and then all kinds of bad things can happen.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
When I do answer, when I finally answer, I say, "Meow," like that.
Meow.
So they can't. They can't take my voice and then call my dad and pretend it's me. You know what I mean?
I answered it once.
So when I answer the phone, if I do answer, it's,
I answered it once and said nothing, waiting for whatever was on the other side to say something, which was never said. So I waited like 3 seconds, nothing was said, and I hung up.
Next time you should just say,
you sound like a Pokemon.
I'm that paranoid because it happens.
Oh,
they'll take your voice and then they'll use it for it. There's some weird, crazy stuff happening out there. Limits.
Yeah,
and I don't want you to get sucked into that.
No, and I'd rather not.
Do you cry when your wiffle ball games are rained out?
So I play in two different leagues, and the guy that runs the South Hills League, South Hills Wiffle, is on my team in Baldwin. I get very, very, very upset in Baldwin when our games get rained out when we play. Like, we have played through rain sometimes because I'm like, we got to schedule the games. We got to get the games in. Now, today's game that we're supposed to play in South Hills against my buddy Zeke, who's the commissioner.
That ain't happening.
That's not happening. So I don't know when that game is going to be played. But yeah, I'm upset about it, but not nearly as upset as if it was Baldwin, which we're playing a lot of games. And if that's a scheduling nightmare for the commissioner to try to figure out.
I used to stare at the sky for a long time when I was playing Little League baseball, you know, like 8 or 9 years old, just so pumped for the game and threatening rain. It used to be like, I think I even used to pray for no rain.
Yeah, we don't play in the rain anymore. We did like years ago, we'd have like rain games, if we needed
to. You should have rain games as long as there's no lightning. That would be fun.
Right, and safety comes into play and
of course it does, stuff like that.
So you just want to make sure. As a commissioner, that you take care of everyone, take care of your family. When you're a commissioner, all the players are your family.
Do you imagine yourself in this job, say, when you're 40?
What job?
Commissioner of the Baldwin Wiffle Ball League.
I've always said that I want to make sure that we get to a decade. We want to get to 10 years. This is season 6.
Yeah.
I mean, I will go on and do it for as long as possible. You know, I love doing it.
I'm going to go to Vermont and meet you guys at the end of August, and to commit to that, can I drive there?
We're driving.
How long?
Like 12 hours.
I'm not driving there. I'll fly
to Burlington.
Burlington.
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes outside the field we play at.
All right, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to find golf courses to play out there, including Louis Tiant used to live. I think he passed, did he not?
He
Louis
has, Tiant? Yes.
He lived in Maine next to a golf course. So I don't know. I just thought I'd go to that golf course in tribute to the great Louis Tiant, whose pitching motion, to bring this full circle, I used to imitate in wiffle ball.
It's your 50 states, 50 rounds of golf.
Yeah, that's gone to pot.
No,
although I could begin in Vermont, yes.
It's gone away.
Yeah. What do you got?
All right, here's the Bechtel Breakdown for this Friday, May 30th, final one in May, brought to you by Southside Plumbing and Heating and our friend Jake at Southside Plumbing and Heating, Jordan Schultz, yesterday, saying that the Steelers have had preliminary conversations with multiple teams about potentially adding another playmaker on offense to complement DK Metcalf.
Pittsburgh is believed to be motivated to get a deal done at some point, though there's still plenty of time before the season, which means there's plenty of time for a Brandon Ayuk-like situation to play out once again.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Everybody needs another playmaker. Yes, the Steelers, again, could probably use a number two. Do we not think that Calvin Austin's capable of being a number two? I guess I'd rather have someone more established, but I like what I saw from him second half of the season or so. You?
I did too. I don't know. A lot of people say, like, oh, well, you don't believe in Calvin Austin. I think Austin's a good player, but I would rather have him be my three than ultimately be my number two wide receiver, because I think he's more of a slot guy that you can utilize, middle of the field, speed receiver. I still think they need to get a bigger threat on the outside to be able to complement that.
Yeah, and maybe you can find that guy once training camp start later in right before the season. Guy gets cut, like a Mike Williams type situation. I don't even remember how they acquired him. It was in a trade, wasn't it? Right around the deadline?
Yeah, for I think a fifth round pick.
Gee, how could I forget about him? He was standing in a straitjacket on the sidelines most of his Steeler career. Even after he would make a play, he would go back to the sidelines and just stand there in a jacket. You remember that?
I do. Remember his first catch was a game-winning touchdown.
Yes. Remember that? They never threw to him again. What a strange tenure for him. Maybe Bob Woods is the answer. I don't know.
I like Robert Woods, but I don't like him any more than as a number three wide receiver.
Well, then he becomes a four if you like Austin. And then what about Ben Skoranek?
Well,
Kabali.
Like,
do you have the Kabali clip from yesterday?
I don't think so.
He said that if you want, I want to find this clip before
Skoranek.
The end of the show. Because I think his exact words were, if you want to make a playoff run, you need Ben Skoranek. I think he actually said that.
You need players like Ben Skoranek on your team. Yeah, that's what he said.
No,
it
was
agree?
Even more definitive than that. At some point, you can find it in a minute. I don't want to interrupt your segment. This is your segment. It's your special time.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead.
All right, Joe. Pat Narduzzi was on the morning show today, and he was discussing a bunch of different things, including scheduling Penn State and West Virginia on the schedule. That seems like a yearly occasion where we end up talking about this. So after this year, there's a hiatus with West Virginia on the schedule. Now, Pitt wants to play WVU every year. Narduzzi also doesn't understand why Penn State isn't on Pitt's schedule every year, wanting the Backyard Brawl and Penn State every year. This take might surprise you. I am 1,000% on board with what Pat Narduzzi is saying.
Who's not? Who wouldn't be on board with that? What do you mean, surprise me?
Now, there's a lot of Penn State people that are like, oh, you don't have to play Pitt.
Of course, Pitt, Penn State
brother.
People.
No,
yeah.
I mean,
okay, I'm sorry.
Pitt. No, play Pitt.
Like, I didn't realize you were coming at it from the Penn State perspective.
I was looking at it from both perspectives. Like, Pitt should want to play them. Pitt has a lot to gain from playing them. And look, Penn State has some stuff to gain, too. That's a good out-of-conference game. Here's the thing for me with that. There are four reasons for this. You have the expanded
four
playoff.
Of them? We have to sit through four reasons now?
Very quick reasons.
All right.
Bullet points, if you will. The expanded playoffs. So Penn State played Pitt a couple of years ago, lost in a season that they could have ultimately made it to the playoffs. If you lose this game against Pitt, it means something, but it doesn't nearly hurt you as much because there's 12 teams maybe going to 16. Michigan and Ohio State are scheduling big out-of-conference games.
Are you still on the first point?
This is the second point.
Okay.
Ohio State is playing Texas this year. That is a huge out-of-conference game that's going to help their resume when you get to seeding everybody. It's great for the area, and it's also very good for Pitt if they win that game. Huge for ramifications for the playoffs, especially if this is an at-large bid, and it's good on Penn State to increase their non-conference games.
I can't
their
talk
first
about
games
this
against
anymore.
Nevada.
I know.
Like, I'll be at that game. I don't want to see Nevada. I want to see Pitt.
Nobody does. I've been talking about this for decades. I can't do it anymore. Of course they should play Penn State, and of course Penn State should play Pitt. And if you ask the thousands and thousands of Penn State alums around here if they want to play Pitt or they want to play the teams that you mentioned in their non-conference, they want to play Pitt. It's a fun game for the state. It is.
It's wonderful for the state. I mean, do you really want to play Nevada on your schedule? That's the first game of the year. Here's the other non-conference games. FIU, Florida, International?
Buffalo, Temple next year, Marshall, Ball State, yep. UMass. Come on.
Villanova.
What are we doing here?
Like, they're going to beat Villanova probably 73-3.
Well, what they're doing
is that
here,
good for Philly? I mean, who cares?
What they're doing here is the Indiana plan. I guess if you play a crap schedule and never lose. Although the playoff's so expanded right now, Penn State will get in no matter what.
Oh,
just play Pitt.
Indiana schedule. Well, that's part of my point. Like, you're likely still going to be able to get in. Indiana football schedule for their non-conference is absolutely horrendous. Did you see their non-conference?
No, let's hear it. Hey, it worked for them last year.
Old Dominion, Kennesaw State,
mm-hmm.
and Indiana State, the Sycamores, where Larry Bird went to college.
Right.
I didn't even know they had a football
but
team.
They'll have plenty of people defending them again next year. The idea is not to lose. So good for them, I say.
Well, I just give credit to the Ohio States and the Michigans of the world. Who did Michigan play last year? Was it Texas? Ohio State's playing Texas this year?
I don't know those teams.
Like, that should get, they should get an upper hand when it comes to the end of the seedings because they scheduled actual quality non-conference games. It's kind of like how, remember Pitt was knocked for the NCAA tournament? Well, you didn't schedule anybody non-conference and West Virginia didn't have a good year and
no,
Missouri was bad.
I don't remember that. Now I'm depressed. Go to the next topic.
All right. Alexander Canario is a different player under Donnie Kelly. 16 games with Derek Shelton, he hit 122 and he slugged 195. With Donnie Kelly, 18 games, 67 at-bats, he's playing a lot more. He's batting .313 under Donnie Kelly. Two homers, five RBIs, an OPS of .839.
Yeah, who knows if it'll work out, but there's only one way to find out, and that's always the point. And having spoken to many, many professional athletes over the years, I often wonder which guys would have made it if only they had been in a place where they'd gotten an opportunity. Like, I was thinking about this watching the Indy game the other night, the Pirates AAA affiliate. Like, how many of these guys were just an opportunity away from making it? And how many are just forgotten forever if they never get that opportunity? So many examples I could use. Brandon Moss is one. You know, he was in and out and in and out here and looked like, you know, a guy who would just be forgotten. And yep. Then he goes to Oakland and he gets an opportunity.
Slugger.
And he becomes a slugger. And there's guys like him in AAA. I don't know, is Matt Gorski that guy? If somebody said to Matt Gorski, you're going to play. We're going to give you 500 at-bats and we're going to see what you can do. Relax. You go one, I think we said this yesterday, you go 1-17, you're going to get an 18th at bat or 19th at bat. Just play, just relax. And I like that Donnie Kelly did that with Canario, and I want him to do that with Henry Davis.
And one thing with that, with Gorski and also with Davis, like, analytics have taken over so substantially. You got to remember, these are people, man. Like, they have emotions, and if you don't give somebody an extended run, they're probably pacing in their hotel rooms. They're thinking about, is this the last game I have? A little bit of self-doubt creeps in. Like,
of course.
Is this the last game I have before I go back down? So
and
that affects people.
And it's also pro sports. So from the team side, you know, especially if you're a team that wins every year, you just can't go telling a guy, oh, yeah, you're going to get 500 at-bats here. We're going to see if you sink or swim. Sometimes, you know, you got to get it going when it's your chance, immediately. That's just the way it is.
Last one for you. As the Stanley Cup Finals are now set, it is the first rematch since the 08-09 Penguins and Red Wings. And on this day, yesterday, in 2017, Jake Guentzel scored the game-winning goal for the Penguins against the Nashville Predators in Game 1, 2017 Stanley Cup Final. I miss those memories. I don't really like seeing it being a rematch.
You can't miss the memory limits. You just
I miss those moments, I should say. And I wish we could get those memories again. But what do you think of the Stanley Cup rematch? Do you think that this is finally the time that McDavid gets it done?
No, I think Florida's the better team. I think this is going to be one of those stories where it's a team that's just flat out not good enough and runs into a nemesis all the time. Many of those in sports history too. Charles Barkley was pretty good, but he ran into Michael Jordan at least once in the finals. Dominique Wilkins was very good. He ran into Jordan a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't think they're going to win. I think Florida's the better team. Do you?
You know who's been really good?
Who?
Brad Marchand.
Yeah,
he's
has.
A plus 11, 4 goals, 14 points in 17 games in the playoffs.
I know. Great trade. great trade.
It was risky.
Don't ever say a deadline trade doesn't put teams over the top, because a lot of times it can.
Jerome Baginla did not, but multiple others for the Penguins helped too. And this trade for Marchand, I mean, that made a great team dominant. I mean, Carolina didn't have much of a fight against them. I agree with you.
Do you want McDavid to win a cup?
Honestly, no.
Why? That's very cruel of you.
I don't know. Like, for the longest time, I didn't want Ovechkin to win one. But when Crosby beat him twice in a row, 16-17, and won it back-to-back, and he cemented himself as having, outside of the goal record, the better resume than Ovechkin with the cups, because I think championships matter, then I was like, you know what? I'm happy for Ovi when they won it in 2018. Like, it's his time. So I don't know if that would ever happen with McDavid, also considering that they don't play in the same conference. But I don't know. There's just a weird feeling about me that is like, I'd be completely okay if Connor McDavid never wins.
I think that's very cruel, and I want him
to win one.
Yeah, I want him to win one. He seems like, I don't know, is he that likable of a character? He just seems to be very boring, doesn't
he? He does. Like,
it's not his fault. Seems like a nice man.
Yeah,
but when people
fine.
Talk about, oh, you have to market the league a little more and market your stars, some stars aren't that marketable. Sorry.
Yeah, or don't want to be marketed.
But maybe you could actually play on that. Play on that the way you would with a Belichick, you know, and do ads where you play on his boringness. You know what I mean?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.